Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC News Talk 1080. I'm Ann Baldwin. It's good to have you along this morning, and I'm so excited to have another very enthusiastic voice in the house today. We've got Paul Lavoie, who is the Chief Manufacturing Officer for the state of Connecticut. Paul, thanks for coming in. I know you're so busy.
Well, you're welcome, Ann. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about manufacturing here in Connecticut.
Well, you know, I've in my professional life here, I have gotten very interested and learned a lot about manufacturing. And I think a lot of our listeners, when they think about manufacturing, they think about, you know, putting gadgets together in you know, machine shops and things like that. But, you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about you, and I want to talk a little bit about how the definition of manufacturing has really changed over the years. What does today's world of manufacturing look like?
Sure. That's a great question, because it has changed significantly over the years. And it's going to continue to change at an incredibly rapid pace. So really, the state of manufacturing right now is really we make the most sophisticated machines known to humans here in the state of Connecticut. So the large manufacturers that we have, right, we invented the nuclear submarine, we invented the helicopter, we invented the jet engine, and we have supply chains that are all around that. And these are very sophisticated machines. But we have a very diverse manufacturing supply chain. We have 4,800 manufacturers here in the state, and they can range from small shops with 2, 3, 4 people all the way up to these large behemoths. But what we're seeing is that we're seeing this incredible transition into what we call Industry 4.0 technologies. Things like the digital transformation, eliminating paper. You know, we went through the third industrial revolution, which was all about computer controlled, right? So CNC, computer numerical control machines, right? Going from manual machines now to computer controlled machines. And most 99% of the manufacturers in the state of Connecticut are running CNC machines, or they're upgrading to CNC machines. The next wave is really all around digital transformation, robotics and automation, the use of AI on the manufacturing floor for us to be able to take the data from these machines and to be able to understand how to best maximize them, as well as new technologies like additive manufacturing, which is the 3D printing of parts.
Right. So it's huge. Yeah. So you were appointed by Governor Lamont in 2022. And when the governor appointed you to this position, what was your mission?
So my mission was initially when I took this job, there's really no job description. There's really not. I mean, this is a job that was created by the legislature, appointed by the governor. I'm the second person to hold this job. The first person, Colin Cooper, was appointed in October of 2019. Then we know what happened in March of 2020.
Right.
And Colin worked to keep the manufacturing industry open and productive during the pandemic. And we all owe a considerable debt of gratitude to Colin for doing that. So when I came in to kind of this new era where we can take a look and we can actually invest in manufacturing. And my goal is really twofold. When I took the job, manufacturing was 10% of the state's GDP.
And GDP,
we have to... gross domestic product,
okay.
Right? So it's 10% of all of the goods and services that we make here in the state of Connecticut. And we're now in 2023, we're at 12.6%.
Good.
So my goal was to grow it to 20% by 2030. So we're making progress in doing that. And the reason for that goal around growing the industry is that we provide life-changing careers for people in manufacturing. These are high-paying jobs that can change generations of the trajectory of generations of families, right?
Sure.
We can basically, you know, we've had places where young kids have gotten careers in manufacturing and they've moved their mothers, their grandmothers into a safe environment with, you know, where they don't have housing insecurity or food insecurity or any of these insecurities because of the income that this student, this young person is making in the manufacturing industry. And the other is to achieve full employment in the manufacturing sector by 2030, because we have a lot of open jobs in the manufacturing sector. We have a lot of open jobs in the state of Connecticut, but we have a lot of open jobs in the manufacturing sector. And my two, so my two goals are very, these high level goals. I want full employment in the manufacturing sector by 2030. I want it to be 20% of the state's GDP. And everything that I do from a strategic standpoint is pointing to those two goals, and Connecticut has a manufacturing strategic plan. So my first order of business was listen to the customers, understand what the issues are, and then build a plan to solve those. And that, you know, I'm 2.5 years into this, and that's what I'm doing now, is executing
that plan. And you're working your way up.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Paul Lavoie. He's the Chief Manufacturing Officer for the state of Connecticut. You know, for me, Paul, it's always refreshing to see somebody in a position like yours who actually has, you're not just a government-appointed person. You've got a background in manufacturing. You've got a passion for manufacturing. How important is that in your position to understand the business that you're promoting?
Well, and the requirement to hold this job is you had to run a manufacturing business in the state of Connecticut.
Okay, and which one did you run?
So I ran Carey Manufacturing. It was a manufacturing company in Cromwell, still there, of course, still doing very, very well.
Good.
I'd been around since the early 1980s, but I was the general manager of Carey Manufacturing. And then prior to that, had worked in another manufacturing company in Bristol. And prior to that, I'd owned a marketing agency that served manufacturers. So I had been involved in the manufacturing industry for the last 15-20 years, but really the last 10 years working in the industry, and then kind of the last five before this job running Carey Manufacturing. And that was the reason why that is the requirement, is that they wanted somebody that really understood the decisions that had to be made on a regular basis when you're running a manufacturing business. And they wanted somebody that could empathize with the manufacturers in the state of Connecticut. And, you know, I've worked in very large companies early in my career and smaller companies there. So I move seamlessly from the break room to the boardroom as it relates to our manufacturing companies, meaning I can go to a three-person company and relate, and then I can go to Pratt & Whitney and be able to relate as well. But you needed to have that industry experience to have this job. And that's the base requirement for this position. So it's a competency-based position, really.
So, you know, for our listeners out there, I would be interested to know, you know, not everyone is suited for college. Let's talk about the next generation in manufacturing, right? I've worked very closely with the academies over at New Britain High School and their state-of-the-art equipment. And you talk about the 3D printing and you talk about the AI. What kind of backgrounds do these people that you're looking to fill these jobs with? What do they need? Do they go to a college? Do they go to a trade school? What's the right career path for this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the question is, and the answer is that there are multiple career paths for young people that are interested in manufacturing. If you go to a comprehensive high school like New Britain High, who happens to have a tremendous manufacturing academy that they invest in, you can go right from high school into the workforce. But the manufacturer that hires you has to understand that they're going to be making significant investments in your continuing education.
Right.
You know, I did a commencement address at Quinnipiac, and I said, congratulations, you've graduated college. Your education is now beginning.
Yes.
Because you're going pro.
Yep.
You're going into the workforce. You're going pro. And now you're really going to learn as to what it's going to take. And so so you can go from a comprehensive high school. We have one of the best technical high school systems in the country. So you can certainly, if you go to a technical high school, you're going to have a deeper level. CT State is one of the top community college systems in the country. So if you wanted to go and learn more and go in at a higher level, you go to CT State and you can get a associate's degree, or you can get certifications there as well. And then if you want to be an engineer, you stay in state and go to some of the amazing engineering programs we have, like at UConn, Central Connecticut State University, all of those opportunities. So So there is a pathway for everybody. It's just recognizing what is the right pathway for you. And understanding that you can go right from high school into the workforce, but at some point in time, you're going to go back and get educated, right? You're
because they want you to learn their product, learn their processes, right? So I've seen so many people even doing paid internships, you know, from high school or earning college credits, and then they transition. Usually those internships turn into jobs. You know, even in the automotive industry, right? They want you to learn the Lexus program. They want you to learn the Mercedes program. They want you to learn the way that they want business done. So it's almost better for them to train you, and then the sky's the limit.
Yeah, absolutely. Work-based learning experiences are the single most important thing that we can do for young people, is really make sure that they're having opportunities to experience work while they're still in school, be it if they're in high school or if they're in college as well. We fund a program through our Manufacturing Innovation Fund for manufacturing internships. What we want to do is we want to create a sticky relationship between our universities and our manufacturers so that the kids that are going to school here stay here, right? So if you learn in Connecticut, I want you to earn in Connecticut.
Right.
And if you're a kid that goes to school out of state, but you live here, when you come back in the summer, we want to give you an internship with a manufacturing company because we want you to stay here in Connecticut and keep your mother happy. Right? So we don't want you going.
If you go to
college somewhere else, we don't want you staying there. We want you coming back home. Make sure mom's happy and dad's happy that you're home.
Well, let's talk about the other hats that you wear, too, because you're the board chair of the Central Connecticut Chamber of Commerce. And that's still the biggest chamber?
Second largest chamber. I am the immediate past chair. So okay. I served as the chair for 3 years because I was the COVID chair, right? I got to serve from 20 to 2022, and 2023 they asked me to stay on an additional year to just provide the transition. And so now I am the immediate past chair. There's a new board chair of the Central Connecticut Chamber, and it's the second largest chamber in the state.
So what's your goal there? Why did you decide to get involved in that?
I was involved with the chamber. I was on the executive committee for over, I think when I'm all said and done, it'll be 7 years. And it was really, it came out of when I owned a consulting business. I was a member of the Monroe Chamber of Commerce. I lived in Trumbull at the time. When I had my marketing agency, I was on the board of the Greater New Haven Chamber of Commerce because we were in downtown New Haven. And I felt it was really important for us to be involved in the local community and to make sure that we were making local connections because our people who work for us live and play in the communities in which we serve. And a lot of the companies that I was working on, I mean, we had, you know, international customers, right? So it wasn't really a play for me to get more customers, right? Mm-hmm. If you have a national business or an international business, joining a chamber of commerce isn't going to get you new local customer.
No. It's not worth the rubbery eggs in the morning.
Right. But we have a responsibility as an organization to make sure that the communities that we do business in and that we support are great places for our employees to live and to play. And so when I went to Bristol and was working at Edder Engineering, I got involved with the chamber. And then, you know, if you raise your hand, they'll love you to kind of work your way up the ladder there. And, the board chair simply provides a sounding board for the president and CEO. Right? Mm-hmm. The president and CEO runs the day-to-day operation of the chamber. The board chair is just there when the president and CEO needs someone to talk to. They have someone to be able to talk to. It's kind of like a coach.
Right.
You know, and so it's great because it allows them to, and it's really only on big decisions, right? A really good board chair of any kind of organization doesn't get involved in the minutiae, the day-to-day. They don't get involved in hiring decisions. They don't get involved in anything else. They just look and evaluate the performance of the executive director of that chamber. So it's great. It's great. It's just a great opportunity to make sure that we're the business community is banding together to make sure that we have great communities for
because
people
that's where the power is, right? It's the businesses that have to have a voice and that have to have someone like you, Paul, to hear that voice and take it back. I mean, you've got direct access to some of the major players up at what I call the big house.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
So that's really important. Yeah. So recently you just had a huge event, sold out event. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we so the manufacturing summit was held on October 2nd. Amazing, beyond our expectations, and of what we thought we could pull off for an event. This is the first event that has been run by the Office of Manufacturing, but it's done in partnership with three really important organizations: CBIA, which the Connecticut Business and Industry Association has always done a manufacturing event, but they would get 400, 500 people. And last year they got 600 people. And I went to Christy Pentima, who's the president and CEO, and said, Chris, imagine if we did something together. I mean, imagine what it would be like. And, you know, we could probably get 1,000 people. We thought that would be great. And then the American Manufacturing Hall of Fame came to us. They're headquartered here in Connecticut, and they wanted to partner. And then the Connecticut Center for Advanced Technology, we brought in as a partner. And so we have these four organizations, and then Constep, which is our manufacturing extension partnership, as a partner. So we had all these people coming together to hold this event that would celebrate manufacturing. October's Manufacturing Month, so it was all designed to celebrate manufacturing. And we had a capacity of 940 people, and we thought, well, if we got 800, we'll be lucky. About 2 weeks before the event was to happen, we were over 1,050 in registrations. It kind of got away from us, and so we were expanded capacity, and we had, you know, the governor spoke and the commissioner spoke, and we had Heather Evans come up from the International Trade Association in Washington, D.C. She's the Assistant Deputy Secretary for Manufacturing. She came up. We had panel discussions. We launched the coolest thing made in Connecticut contest and all of that, and it was very exciting. And it's not, you know, the festivities of Manufacturing Month will continue, because on October 14th, we do a week-long bus tour of Connecticut, where we're going to be going to manufacturers each day in a different part of the state to celebrate the history of manufacturing.
How great is that? So yeah. what was the takeaway from that conference?
Well, it really is that you know, manufacturing is really so important to the economy of Connecticut, and to really celebrate it. I mean, we have a history of manufacturing exhibit that people were walking through to be able to see that long history. So I think it's important for us to know where we came from, but more importantly, where we're going.
Right. It's kind of sexy now.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Manufacturing's kind of sexy.
Well, and we had a panel around innovation, and we had four manufacturing leaders who are in different phases of bringing in innovation into their companies. And it really inspired the audience to start thinking about where manufacturing is going, knowing that no state supports manufacturing like Connecticut. The governor, we have the best governor in the country as it relates to supporting manufacturing. We're the only state that has my role. There's no other state that has
really
a chief manufacturing officer, part of the executive branch of government. And there's no other state that has an office of manufacturing in the executive branch of government. So we want our plans for next year and beyond are to make this a national event and to make it more than just one day. But the day that we had was just off the charts. It was just amazing.
Wow. So the sky's the limit when it comes to that.
Yeah.
So talk about some of the big players and some of the smaller players in manufacturing. And like we talked about in the beginning, the definition has changed. I know that I work with SignPro, and I go to Southington and I see the machines that are going. I see the 3D printers. I see that, you know, manufacturing, they're creating huge, you know, golf balls for the Hartford Healthcare Tournament. I mean, it's just evolved so much. You almost have to see it to believe it.
Yeah, and that's why I have the best job in America, because every day for me is a field trip. I get to go out and visit manufacturers, and
right,
I get to see all of this cool stuff that we make and the really, really amazing people that work in the manufacturing sector. We have some of the best and brightest talent in the country working in our manufacturing sector. And again, as we talked about, it goes from the most sophisticated machine known to human is a nuclear submarine. A nuclear submarine can take an entire crew, go to subsea levels where they can't be detected. And the only reason they ever have to surface for 30 years, the only reason to surface in a 30-year period is when they run out of food. They make their own water, they make their own air, they make their own environment while they're underwater, and they are powered by a nuclear reactor that can power them for 30 years. And again, the only time they ever have to come up is because they've just run out of food. And so when you think of that,
right,
and by the way, nobody knows where they are, right? Nobody knows. So the one of the main reasons why we have world peace, if you will, to some degree outside of Russia and Ukraine, is that none of our adversaries know where our nuclear subs are. And they're absolutely petrified. We're a full generation ahead of any of those adversaries as it relates to nuclear submarines. And by the way, there's a whole supply chain around that. The same thing with Pratt & Whitney and Collins Aerospace. There are 44 suppliers in the state of Connecticut to the Artemis program, which is our return to the moon. And NASA was just in town a couple of months ago to celebrate some of those manufacturers. And I joined them in the celebration of Connecticut's role in putting people back on the moon.
And really big, really, really big things.
And then helicopters, medical device innovations with Medtronic and robotic surgery and things like that. We have a very large chemical processing industry. Every can that you have is coated, and that coating comes from a company in Connecticut. So anytime you go and pop open a Coke can and drink it, it's pure and safe because of the coatings that are made here by a company in Wallingford. So,
interesting.
So it's when you can't fly without Connecticut. We're number two in the country in shipbuilding. I mean, there's just so many things that we manufacture that are in your everyday life that are just so critical that nobody really knows.
Not bad for a small state.
Yeah.
So again, Paul Lavoie is in the house. He's the chief manufacturing officer for the state of Connecticut. You know, and it's still hands-on, right, Paul, manufacturing, but it's more heads-on. It's computer, it's writing code, it's working. Like, they're not taking the jobs necessarily in some cases. You still need the human to make them operate, to program them, to make sure that things turn out right, correct?
Yeah, we'll never eliminate humans in the manufacturing process because of just the variability of the process, and you still need somebody that can troubleshoot and to do all of that. It's really important for young people to learn the manual skills of manufacturing before they move on to the computer skills of manufacturing, because without that base, you don't really know how to problem solve. So we make sure that our programs, our education programs, start with making parts using manual lathes and bridge ports and other things like that before we allow kids to advance on to CNC machines, because we want them to have that base, right? They have to understand geometry, for example, and
right,
how that works. And
right, math and science and all those things, English, everything plays into that.
And then, you can certainly move along to a CNC environment where you're programming a machine and looking at the operation of the machine. Then you go on to automated equipment. So we have manufacturers that used to have seven people assembling parts. It's all done by a machine with one operator, but that one operator has to understand industrial automation, has to understand how the machine works and all of that. And then when we talk about AI, AI will not replace the worker on the shop floor, but a worker who understands and uses AI will replace a worker who doesn't because of access to the technology. So as we continue to move along, we're going to upskill and reskill our manufacturing workforce. We won't see a lot of job growth only because there's no people to fill the jobs. We really are going to be taking jobs that we can't find people to do. We're going to be looking at automating that while we continue to upskill the workforce, which again provides greater career opportunities for people.
How hard do you have to fight for us and fight for Connecticut to get through some of the barriers, let's say political barriers, all the bidding contracts and all that kind of thing? Does Connecticut stand at a point of advantage right now, or is that something that you also go to bat for?
No, we are fortunate. We have three things that no other state has. We are the first, some other states have them now, but we were the first state to have a bipartisan manufacturing caucus. In 2012, Connecticut was the first state in America to said manufacturing is important. Republicans and Democrats came together to support manufacturing. So I have 100% support of the legislature around manufacturing, which is amazing. The legislature created the Manufacturing Innovation Fund, which is a fund that I get to use to invest in the manufacturing sector. I also have a board. So I'm the board chair of the Manufacturing Advisory Board. That board gets to use that fund to invest in manufacturing, and we've invested $125 million since 2015 in small to medium-sized manufacturers. These are manufacturers 300 employees or less, or 100 employees or less, and we're the only state with a chief manufacturing officer. We support manufacturing. I get support all across our political landscape. I am one of the luckiest and most supported individuals in state government. I'm incredibly fortunate for the opportunity that I have to support and grow the manufacturing sector.
So with just a few minutes left, Paul, and again, Paul Lavoie is here. He is the state of Connecticut Chief Manufacturing Officer, one of the only ones in the United States.
The only one.
The only one.
One
you, who can
the.
Say you are the only one in the United States of America? So what is your message for people? I mean, is this something that we should have our young people looking at? Is this something maybe if somebody wants to restart a new career a little bit later in life? It's never too late.
It's never too late. I took a 60-year-old auto mechanic and made him into a production supervisor, and he's having the time of his life at Carey Manufacturing, still working there. GotItMadeCT.com. So GotItMadeCT.com is a website where you can look at what kind of careers are available in manufacturing and how you can have a life-changing career. Again, these are jobs that are paying, you know, $50,000 to start, $100,000 7 to 8 years into it. So gotitmadect.com. And it's never too late to start. I do, when I speak to students groups, I've had parents come up to me and say, can I get a job in manufacturing? I say, yes, you can. We absolutely can, because we have programs, be it at CT State or some of the other organizations that will reskill you and upskill you for a career in manufacturing. But manufacturing is the best industry to be in. You make things, and you know where that what you're making, you know where they're going, and you know what it is that they're being used for. And so every day you have that connection to meaning. Right, you can say, you know, I make, for example, we had a guy that worked at a manufacturing company, and he worked in aerospace, and he was taking his daughter to Disney World. And when he was walking on the plane with his daughter, she goes, Daddy, are you going to tell the pilot you helped make this plane?
Wow.
And he started laughing like, I don't think so.
But only if it makes it to its destination.
But in her mind,
Daddy makes the plane.
Daddy makes the plane, right? And that's Connecticut manufacturing. We make things that make huge differences in people's lives, and to work in that field is incredibly rewarding, and I'm honored to serve as Connecticut's Chief Manufacturing Officer.
Well, I really applaud, you know, all that you've accomplished and what you've set to accomplish, and more importantly, your enthusiasm, you know, because that's what we need. Someone who comes from a standpoint of, you get it, you've done it, and now you just want the best for the manufacturing industry right here in your state and my state.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for tourism and everything else that you do. So thank you, Paul, for taking the time to be here. And again, it is gotitmadect.com. That's the best place to go and check out all the opportunities that are right in front of you, right?
You're absolutely right.
Okay, well, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Ann.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in to this edition of News You Can Use. I'm Ann Baldwin. We'll see you back here again next weekend on WTIC News Talk 1080.